What's up, guys? My name's Abe, recovered crack cocaine addict and alcoholic. Yeah, I've been given the gift of sobriety since October 20th of 2004. And for an alcoholic crackhead like me, that's a big deal. You know, that's a lot of one day at a times. You know, the first time I came and spoke was out here at the ranch. And my sponsor at the time, we were on our way out here just to do a meeting, and he was like, yeah, you ought to meet our speaker. You know, he's a pretty interesting guy. I was like, cool. I'm looking forward to that. Who is it? And he's like, you're speaking. I'm like, you know, I had 3 months of sobriety, and I was like, I don't have anything. You know, all I did was, you know, did what you told me to do. And when he gave me this prayer, and it said, God, speak to me and through me. Make your words my words. You know, just real simple. And I stepped aside and I did that. And something happened. It was an hour later. I talked for the whole hour. And for the first time, I'd been used as a vessel to carry a message that I didn't know I had inside of me. You know, I'm not a professional speaker. I don't, you know, do circuits, you know, but I owe a debt to Austin Recovery. This place saved my life. This place brought me in. I didn't, you know, there are so many people in here that were like, oh man, I need this so bad. You know, this is my last shot. I need it. And I got intervened on. So I didn't, you know, I thought that separated me from you guys that came in with this great desperation. You know, and because I didn't want to, you know, I'd asked him in admissions. I was like, do you have a crack-only program? Yeah. But they hadn't written that curriculum yet. I guess they still haven't. I've smashed 1,000 pipes. Like, this time I'm done. And I mean it this time. You know, thrown away all my paraphernalia, erased my phone, just, you know, I've done all of that before 1,000 times, man. I meant it, you know, because she said, if you don't come home one more time, we're done. The job said, if you don't show up one more time, you're through. And none of that was enough to keep me clean and sober. You know, I wanted to quit, you know, mid-20s, you know, it's gotten bad, and I wanted to quit, but I can't stay stopped. You know, I want to be this good guy that, like, comes home and gives her the paycheck and, like, you know, just mows the yard and does the dishes, but that's not my story. You know, I can do that for a week or two, maybe a month or two, but I'm fucking miserable. You know, I'm playing the stage character, playing house, and that's not me. You know, I've got this thing inside of me that just wants to burn it all down. You know, and I don't know what it is, because I'm really good at building it up and burning it all down. Building it up and burning it all down. I've got broad shoulders and a big ass. You know, I can dig I can dig a mean hole, you know, but I can fill it up just as good. You know, I can burn down this whole thing and I can build it right back. And, you know, without missing a beat. And I thought that's what separated me from you guys. You know, the people that I was in treatment with. You know, because they just burn it down. I burn it down and build it back and burn it down and build it back. But man, by the time I got here, I was just tired. You know, I'm tired of having to build it back. I'm just tired. You know, I told, I got intervened on by a guy I was working for. And it's funny because I was partying with this guy. And when the people you're partying with start intervening on you, like when your dealer's like, hey, man, you need to slow down, you know, you might have a problem, you know. So I said, I'll go to detox, but I'm not doing that rehab thing. I hit my first rehab at 13 years old, you know, and so I was like, I already know about rehab. It's fine, but it's not that bad. You know, because I'd been homeless before. Crack cocaine has separated me from my family. You know, I've been on the streets of Seattle, walking around with a backpack, staying with a friend one night, telling him, oh, I'm going to go stay with another friend, and just going to sleep in the park because I didn't want everyone to know that I was homeless. And but it wasn't like that this time that I got into Awesome Recovery. I just bought a house, had a brand new truck in the driveway. Externally, everything was fine, but internally, I was dead. You know, I was so tired, man. You remember waking up and, you know, I just bought a house. I was in that middle bedroom. The whole house was empty. Ashtrays everywhere, bongs, scales, guns. You know, the place was a wreck. There was nothing in there but like an Adirondack chair that I brought in from outside. You know, but outside of the house, it looked fine. And that's what I looked like. Outside, I looked fine, but inside, I was empty and dirty. And I woke up, you know, and I had half a half gallon of Bushmills sitting right there by me. The house was trashed. This guy that I was hanging out with had gone through all my stuff looking for my stash. And the front door was wide open. And it was Monday morning, and I was supposed to go to work. No, it was Sunday. And you know, I was done. I saw that half a bottle and saw all my stuff was turned out, and I was just like, you know, I'm done. Then I reached in my pocket and I still had a quarter ounce of Coke, and I'm like, well, I'm almost done. Yeah. So 3 days later, I call for help. You know, I wanted to say that was my moment of clarity. I've had so many moments of clarity. You know, every time I smash a pipe, it's a moment of clarity. You know, where, man, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. I'm done. For real. And I had that same feeling. And, you know, I know it's fleeting at best. And I show up to work, and they're in a production meeting. And I was in sales, so I don't have, you know, I can show up 3 days late to work, show up for production meeting. My sales are higher than anyone's sales, so I don't know about you guys, but we're good bullshitters, so we're good at sales. So if you think you're just a con artist and a bullshitter, get into sales, you know. And so I show up to the production meeting, and I fall asleep during the meeting. And he calls me into his office afterwards, and he's like, "Hey, man, you need to get some help." I'm like, what? He's like, "I can't let you go on like this. You're killing yourself." And, I knew I needed something. You know, because I'd had moments like that where people that knew me and loved me had pulled me aside, and they're like, "Man, you need something. You need Jesus in your life or something." You know, and I'm, it's not that bad, you know, and so he caught me at a low, and I was like, all right, I'll do detox, but I'm not doing that rehab stuff. And I went into detox, had Awesome Recovery, and, you know, I got, this time I knew something was different. I cleaned my house. I had this big box. I just bought this, like, big electronic something. I had this big box sound system, or I don't know what it was, but I filled it up with like triple beams and mirrors and paraphernalia and bongs and just everything. I filled it up and took it to the dumpster. I went over to my mom's house, and I said, I'm going to get some help. She was like, help? You're doing great. You just bought a house. You've got a great job. You have a truck. And I remember that look of disappointment on her face, because I'd seen it so many times for so many years. You know, I'd see her across the room. We'd be at a family thing, and they'd be like, oh, how's your sister? How's Lori? And, you know, she just got married. She's going to have kids. How's Frankie? Oh, he just graduated college. You know, he's doing great. Just got married. How's Abe? Oh, he just got his second DWI. She wouldn't say that, but I could just see her face like drop when they had talked about me. And it was 2 days before my dad's birthday. And I was like, well, maybe I'll wait until dad's birthday and then I'll go get some help. And she was like, if you need help, go get it right now. This is the best gift you could give him. And so I went into detox. You know, I want to say that was my last day that I used, but on my way into detox, I took like 6 bars and, you know, just got thoroughly loaded before I showed up because I want to come in like a rock star, you know, like, yeah. And I did. I was a mess. And one of the guys that worked at Detox for so many years, he saw me like 5 years later. He was like, you know, still to this day, you're the worst guy that's ever been through our detox. He was like, we had 2 staff on you the whole time. And I was self-will run riot. You know, I wanted what I wanted. I wanted it now. I'm entitled to the gills. I'm different than these guys. You know, they didn't drink and use like me. You know, I'm so different than everybody that I'm in rehab with. You know, I'm just terminally unique. And, you know, I'm like, I want to see the UT game, you know. And I got all the clients to, like, sign this thing that said they wanted to see the game even if they didn't. Like, I gave them, like, cigarettes, and I was just paying people to sign this thing. And finally they put on the game, and I fell asleep during it, you know. I didn't even watch the game. I remember it was the last day of detox, and I saw these little heroin addicts, like, leaving out the back gate. Because, you know, it's not a locked facility. You know, you can leave anytime you want. And and I remember thinking, you know, if I leave, that's it, I'm done. And, so I went to my counselor and I was like, hey, you know, I think I saw the flyer for the ranch. And I was like, everyone was like, hey, we're going to the ranch, we're going to the ranch. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool, you know, I want to go to the ranch. Like, the picture had like horses and a pool. I was like, yeah, this looks great. And and she was like, well, you know, it's $17,000 or however much it was. And I'm like, I don't have anything. You know, and she was like, well, we've got a county-funded bed. If this guy doesn't show up today, you can have his spot. And I'm not religious at all, you know. I grew up religious, but I turned my back on it a long time ago. And I remember saying this prayer. And I said, God, please let this guy go do dope for one more day. You know, because I wanted help. And the guy didn't show up. And so I got to roll out to the ranch. And I remember when she told me, you know, we got that spot for you. I'm like, great, let me run by the house. I need to run by the office, go by the bank. Let me do some things, and I'll meet you all at the ranch. And she's like, no, grab your trash bag. We're going to the ranch. I just pleaded for this spot at the ranch, you know, and already I'm making terms on what my recovery is going to look like. Like, let me do this. And she said, what are you going to do in 30 minutes that you haven't done in 30 years? Damn. And I was like, fair enough. And I got on, and that was my first time I surrendered. You know, fine, I'll go. And I show up here, and there's no horses and no swimming pool. And I'm in sales, so I'm like, all right, good one, you got me. You know, it's a fucking warehouse of drug addicts, you know. And I've been in places like this before, you know, dormitory type situation, and, You know, it was like, I know how to do this. 30 days, sit with the Mexicans, play dominoes, you know. So I did. I went over to the guys. I'm like, what's up, you know? And I was like, so what's the deal here? Like, you know, is it coffee, cigarettes? I'm trying to find out what's the currency. Like, what's going to make me, how am I going to, you know, not work? And how am I going to get you all to do my little work chores for me? And, you know, what's... And he was like, no, it's not like that here. We're just trying to get better. And so I was like, shit, this is real. You know, and I go in to talk to my counselor. And it's this little southern lady, old lady. Her office was dimly lit. It smelled like lavender. And she's just so sweet. And she's just like, hey, honey, welcome, you know. And I'm just... So I'd never really done this thing, but I'd seen it on TV. Like, you lay on the couch and you tell them all your shit, you know. And I sat back in the chair and I started telling her everything, just everything. Just started, you know, my dad didn't love me like he loved my brother. You know, my mom was neglectful. I have a hateful family. You know, just all this stuff. You know, and shot a kid when I was 15, you know, been hustling since I was, you know, just everything. My cousin was murdered. I've, you know, just all this shit. This is why I'm a drug addict. You know, I'm trying to put it all out there so she can fix it. Here's how fucked up and broken I am. Put that in your chart and we'll work on that shit. And and she's doing a county-funded intake. She's like, what's your social? You know? She's not even like the therapist, you know? And it's like, fuck. And so she sees me, and I'm so embarrassed, you know? I'm just like, God damn. I just told her everything. And she was like, how's that feel? I was like, I don't know, you know, good? And she's like, good's not a feeling. How do you feel? And she made me wear this dumbass sign that said, ask me how I feel, and it had, like, pictures of emotions on it. And I grew up in an alpha Hispanic military family. We don't talk about feelings. You don't talk about how you feel. You give directions. I feel hungry. I feel tired. You know, those are feelings. So I had this dumb thing, and it's like scared, perplexed, you know, all this dumb shit, you know. And so I had to wear that stupid thing, and people would be like, how do you feel? I'd be like, fucking walk away, motherfucker. Like, And there was cool stuff. I don't remember any of the lesson plans or any of the cognitive things that they wanted me to learn or any of that shit. But I remember you'd like sleep to hippie music and then draw shit and, you know. I called it sleep therapy. I don't remember. You know, I don't remember all the stuff that I learned out here, but I remember that guys came out from the 12-step programs to come tell their story. And guys came out from 12-step programs, and they had big watches and big trucks, 20-plus years, and I didn't hear a word they said. This guy came out from Cocaine Anonymous. He had 6 months of sobriety, lived in a sober house with 10 guys. He worked in a kitchen for $8 an hour. And I wanted what this guy had. Fat Mexican, busted up grill. And I wanted what this guy had. This guy had freedom. I believe this guy did dope the way I did dope. And I believed he didn't ever have to do it again. So I said, I'm going to try this thing one time, and if it works, great. And if not, fuck it, I already know how to live that other life. You know, and so I'm gonna do this thing, and, you know, and I'm afraid, you know. I'm so full of fear. You know, I'd hear people talking about that, you know, full of fear. And I came in like, I'm not afraid of shit. You know, I've done some dumbass shit. You know, I used to drive all my families down on the border. You know, I used to do a lot of international commerce. Like, I keep a straight face, and, you know, and, but I'm full of fear. I'm sitting in here and I'm afraid. It's like, what if this shit doesn't work? You know, and I'm afraid of the flip side of it. What if this does work? I don't know how to live a life without dope. I don't know how to live a life without alcohol. I don't know how to live a life without hustling. You know, and I'm scared. Because the gig's up. You know, they're asking me to leave that stage character. That guy that I've worked on so long, establishing that stage character that's not afraid of anything, that can do anything, that can walk anywhere. I'm afraid of letting that guy go. I said I'm going to do this thing mechanically. I'm going to say the prayers. I'm going to show up early. I'm going to help. I'm gonna do this thing, and I got a sponsor, and I started doing this work. Actually, that dude that came out and told his story, I was like, he had 6 months, and I was like, who's your sponsor? Because I should have just asked him to sponsor me, but I wanted his sponsor, because I want, you know, if you got good dope, I want to go to the guy you get it from. So he's like, if you got a good sponsor, I want to go to his sponsor, you know. So I'm gonna jump a fence and get one rung up higher on the spiritual ladder. And it didn't work out. I got this other guy that I met at a meeting, and the first thing he told me, actually, when I was in rehab, I had this counselor, and you know, she had called me on some things that I'd never been called on. She was like, "Abe, you don't even know how to inflect your voice without trying to get something that you want." She was like, "You're such a manipulator." And I was like, "Well, that's what voice inflection's for. It's to, it's to give the message of what I want." And, you know, and, she's like, "Just stop. Stop manipulating. Stop the con. Stop." I'd come in her office. I'd be like, "You know, I haven't seen you in a week. You know, you know, I came in like... I cried to get that spot in recovery. You know, I prayed for this dude not to show up. You know, please don't show up. I want that spot so bad. But by week two or three, I'm judging the speakers that are coming out to help us. I'm judging the staff. The staff is lazy. These counselors haven't seen me in a week. You know, my gratitude goes out the window. Because I don't know about you guys, but I heal up quick. You know, a week or two of sleep, and I'm like, oh, I'm good, you know, I'm going to go back home. I got it, you know, don't drink, don't do drugs, you know, go to meetings. I get it, and the thing is, I don't get it. I don't know how to stay sober. One thing that happened when I was in rehab, I got out, and I went to the best meeting I've ever been to. It was a Thursday night recovery text meeting at Cocaine Anonymous. All they talked about was power and freedom. And I was like, that's the thing. You know, there was like girls and, you know, it was cute. They were cute and, was, you know, and I was like, man, this recovery is all right. I'm going to be able to do this, you know. And I went back the next night and it was a woman's meeting. And and they didn't let me stay. And so I'm looking in my phone, and I'm like, dealer, user, drinker, dealer, drinker, user, sponsor. I call him, no answer. Call people I went to rehab with, no answer. And I remember sitting there, and I'm so alone. You know, I'm dressed, I'm ready, I'm clean, I'm looking to go to a meeting. But there's no meeting, and I'm alone. And and I was like, fuck, man, this sucks. You know, I didn't have God. I didn't have a solution. I didn't have a fellowship. I didn't have a program. I'm all there by myself. And I was like, man, I smoked at the time, so I was like, I'm going to go get some cigarettes. I passed up two convenience stores, wound up at a liquor store, and I, you know, because they're cheaper there. And so so I go to the liquor store, and I'm sitting outside, and I'm still trying to call my sponsor, and he's not answering. And I know this is a bad idea, because I want that whiskey in there so bad. I could taste it. I could taste it in my mouth. I could feel the warmth, you know, that feeling that you get when you get that first one. And I know what happens when I relapse, because I've quit before, and I know that ease and comfort that comes at once. Not even by taking it, just by having it in my pocket. Just by knowing that I can if I want to. And so I'm like, I'm going to get a bottle just in case I want to. And I'm sitting outside of that liquor store, man, and I just broke down. I was like, I don't want to do this. One day out of rehab, and I almost blow this thing up. And it's like a couple days before Thanksgiving. I came in October 20th, so it's maybe a week before Thanksgiving. And I thought about the powerlessness that once I take a hit, I've been a block away from my family on Thanksgiving before and stuck, and I can't go. And I want to be at the family Thanksgiving. I want to be there. I love my family. I want to be there. My brother's in town, you know, all the kids. I want to be there. But I'm stuck in that hotel room. And it's not because I don't love my family. It's because once I take that hit, I can't stop. I can't stop until I'm stopped. Someone needs to stop me. And I drive away by grace. It's not because I worked some amazing program. I left that liquor store by grace. And grace is unearned, undeserved favor. And it falls on all of us equally. I didn't earn more grace because I sat through more lectures and listened and sat in the front with a big book and took notes during rehab. I got grace because I'm one of you guys. And it falls on all of us. And I drove away, and I drove by the meeting on my way home, and there's a dude sitting out front. I'm like, hey, there's no meeting. It's a women's meeting. He's like, yeah, there's a men's meeting right after this. Hang out. And I sat with this guy, and this guy was fucking nuts. You know, he was like this like homeless crackhead, and he's like reading poetry, and I was like, what the fuck, you know? But I stayed, and I went to the meeting, and I didn't get high that night. You know, and the next morning I went to this men's meeting, and it was amazing. I found a fellowship. I found a home group. I've been going to that group for 14 years. I chaired it yesterday. You know, I owe something to that Thursday night group and that Saturday morning men's group. I owe something to Austin Recovery. There I found a fellowship. I was part of this alumni for 10 years. President, secretary, unity. I've done every position in the 12-step fellowships. I showed up at every event, every alumni event. I showed up early. I carried stuff. I set up chairs. I got involved. You know, because I used to say, I'm grateful for this and I'm grateful for that. You know, what are you grateful for today? You know, it's like, oh, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my health. But what are my actions showing me? My actions show me that I don't care about my family. I don't care about my health. My mouth says, oh, I care about my truck. Thanks for my truck. But what's the inside of my truck look like? My mouth says, I'm grateful for my family. But when's the last time I called them when I didn't need anything? You know, because I'm entitled to the gills. And entitlement's the opposite of gratitude. I did 30 days at rehab. I need an apartment. I need a car. It's like, no, you need to earn your own money and pay for your own shit is what you need to do. You know, page 58 in the big book, it says, we share in a general way what we were like. And in a general way, I want to say I was a good guy. You know, sorry, my ADD is so bad. Maybe when this stops off. The story's like over, and I'll start over in a second. I don't even remember what I was talking about. Yeah, recovery or something. I don't know. I didn't do dope, and now I'm sober. Yay. Gotcha. Entitlement, there you go. Gotcha. The guy that intervened on me, he was my broker. I was working for a mortgage company. And I was working with guys with finance degrees, working in an office, top of my field. And I lied and manipulated to get my position. I'm a ninth grade educated dope dealer. And I got that position because I said I did stuff that I didn't know how to do. And I've done that my whole life. I used to build stages. Oh, have you ever drove forklift? Oh, yeah, I'm certified in 3 states, you know. Except this one, you know. And so I'd get to drive forklift. Oh, you ever done lights or sound? Oh, yeah, I used to rig for Rolling Stones or something, you know, just. And so I'm working in this field that I don't even. Here's the problem with being a stage character and a manipulator, is by the time you become what you want people to become, you don't believe you're that guy. So I want you to see me as this guy that's in finance. I want you to see me as this guy that, you know, comes from here and has done this. But by the time you give me love and try and respect me, you love this stage character. So I can't reciprocate love because you bought into the stage character. If you knew how broken I was inside, if you knew how neglected I feel, if you know what I feel about myself, there's no way you could love me. So I'm broken. there's so much going on. I forgot what I was talking about again. Would everyone stop moving? Just nobody move for like 18 more minutes. I'll close my eyes. Don't pass things. Don't just look forward and put your hands in your pocket. Everyone put your hands in your pocket for 18 minutes, I swear. I remember 10 years into my sobriety, I decided to get on the market and start dating. And I called my sponsor at the time, and I just went on my first Tinder date, and because I didn't want to date in the rooms, I was going to give you all a pass, you know. And man, I had this great date, and man, it was fire. You know, we were connecting, and I told her all my funniest shit, and all, you know, and man, she was into it, and so I go in for the kiss at the end of the night, and she like pulls back. I'm like, what the fuck, you know? I'm crushed. I'm devastated. And you know, I call him. I'm like, dude, I don't understand. You know, I did all my funniest shit. You know, there's no way I couldn't have closed that deal. You know, so it's not even like a person. It's a deal. You know, it's like I'm closing deals. You know, and he was like, yeah, you gave her the Abe show. You sold her that stage character. Even if she would have bought in, you would have never been able to give her that back. You would have never been able to reciprocate what she was giving to you because you gave her the Abe show. You would have never been able to live up to that. So the manipulator in me is like, cool, I'll stop using game on all my dates and just come in broken and fumbling. And, you know, and then my closing ratios went up. I was like, man, I'm closing deals. And these are people, you know. So I thought I was good at dating, but apparently I wasn't. That's what my girlfriend says. She says I was really bad at it. But that was the game, being bad at it. So early sobriety, I put down the pipe, I put down the booze, and I picked up the fork and the sweets and video games, and I got fat. I'm serious, like 500 pounds fat. I was like twice me. This was 4 years ago. And I've been given this second chance at life, and I'm squandering it. I'm sitting at meetings. I'm helping people like Tim was talking about it, but I'm dying once I go home. Once I go home, once I get out of that meeting, I'm going to kill myself. So something happened. I had an awakening again. I don't want to live that life. So I changed my life. Started going to the gym. Started changing the way I eat. Started doing 30 minutes of cardio before I start lifting weights. I changed my life. I kept my recovery because, man, my recovery is my fire. That's my life. You know, I go to meeting. I start my day with prayer meditation for 14 years in a row. I'm mechanical about this shit. I got sober through the mechanics of Alcoholics Anonymous in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. I got sober through mechanics. I pray, I meditate, I help other people. I gave my life to God, this thing that I didn't believe in. I came in with a concept. You know, you see God all up and down the steps. I'm like, man, that's great for like you sheep that are like, God, you know, like, oh, you followers, you know, but I'm not that. I'm broken. I'm like, I don't believe. I've got, you know, this like, I can't follow. And the way it was explained to me is God is Dallas. I don't have to know my way around Dallas. I don't have to believe in Dallas. I have to be willing to walk north on I-35 and Dallas will make itself apparent. That's what I did. I walked north. I came in with this belief. It's like, cool, spirit of the universe, Native American, like wind and nature and science. And what started off as this like concept, I started seeing you guys get sober. Started seeing the people in the rooms get sober and working with people and seeing the light come on in their eyes. Started seeing other people get happy. I see God in you before I see it in me. So I came to believe. I came to believe by watching you guys. I didn't come to believe on my own. So what started off as this concept turned into experiences. I started having experiences with you guys having experiences with this power. What happened after that is I started getting reliance. I know this thing's going to show up. I started saying God and calling it God because I'm not articulate enough to call it anything else. You want me to say God? Fine. God, I'm broken, man. I'm so broken. I'm so alone. I'm so afraid. You want me to say God? Fine, God. I give up. I'm not so cool. And, you know, I don't know if you're having this God problem, like you're so like gangster, you're so punk rock, or you know, you're so whatever you are, you know, that you can't say God. One of my favorite lines in the Big Book, it says, deep down inside of every one of us is the fundamental idea of God, but it's blocked by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. Calamities like my problems. This world's so fucked up. How could there be a God? People are, you know, people are dying. There's drought, you know. Pomp is my arrogance. Yeah, I already know, you know, God. I already got that, you know. I already get this whole God thing, you know. I don't really need that part. and worship of other things. You know, this the third step belief that if things were just different, then I'd be happy. You know, if she'd just give me one more shot, then I'd be happy. If they would just let me come back to work, then I could be happy. If these people just saw me like this, then I'll be happy. If I could just make a little more, then I'll be happy. If they just let me come back to work, then I can be happy. It's like all these external things have to line up and then I can get happy. And that's what blocks me from happiness. You know, I cause my own misery. I'm the maker of my own misery. And this is the best part of it, is that I can stop it. I can stop relying on her to fill my void. I can stop relying on that money to fill my void. I can stop relying on that group to fill my void. I have a relationship with this power. You want me to call it God? Fine, God. I had an experience walking forward, watching you guys get sober, watching the light come on in your eyes. I seen God. I see him in you before I see him in me. I did my third step with my sponsor, and we went to the this group, and they have a big room and a small room. We went to the small room, and there's like a window where you can see out and they can't see in. And I'm seeing everybody out there, and we get down on our knees, and we did that third step prayer. We got down on our knees, and we held hands, and we said that prayer. I said, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you will. Relieve me from the bondage of self, that I might better do your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them will bear witness to those I would help. Your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. And I'm giving my life to God. Stop moving. So I'm giving my life to God, and all I can think about is, man, I hope nobody can see me. This feels gay as shit. You know? And I remember laying in that hotel room in between those beds. You know, my heart's about to explode. I'm sweating. I'm hitting that pipe. And my arm's numb. And I'm about to pass out. And I don't remember how I knew this prayer, but I started saying this serenity prayer. I'm about to OD. And I start saying this serenity prayer. And I don't even know where I learned it. Maybe in treatment when I was 13. I have no idea where I learned it. It didn't stop me from hitting that pipe. And I'm sitting there, and I'm giving my life to God. I'm giving my life to this group and this program. And all I can think about is what other people are thinking about me. I remember when I was sitting in that hotel room, I'm about to die, and I'm writing my mom this letter with my numb arm. And it said, this is not a suicide, it's an overdose. Even when I'm dead, I want you to think well of me. You know, I'm still trying to control what you think of me when I'm dead. And here I am giving my life to God, and all I can think about is what those people might be thinking about me in this submissive position, holding hands with this guy in this dark room. And I realized I need to stop. Who cares? Who cares what they think of me? I want to change, man. I'm broken. I'm tired. You want me to say God? Fine, God. And I gave my life to God, and I started writing that four step, and I got into inventory, and I started paying $20 increments on $20,000 debts. You know? If you're sitting in here and you're like, oh, I'm never going to be able to pay that back, I'm da-da-da, stick around. You know, I went to my parents. You know, I sat around here long enough, and I watched everybody come in, and they're like, yeah, I went to my family, and they're like, stay sober, and that's the amends. And I went to my family. My dad got the calculator. He's like, that time you tried to go to back to school, that apartment that we bailed you out of, your DWI, it's like $40,000. He's like, yeah, you $40,000. And he made a spreadsheet. And my dad was a CPA. And But what he did was he wanted me to make my amends so I could get the freedom. Because a lot of people talk about the freedom, and only a few people get to experience the freedom. He wanted me to experience the freedom. And that's what I got. That's what happened. I started making $20 debts, payments on $20,000 debts. I started making $5 payments on $5,000 debts. I kept showing up. I kept showing up early. I started talking to the weird guy in the corner that no one would talk to. What's up, dude? And I learned how to get comfortable, you know, because I walked into that meeting and it's like all old guys. And I was so, you know, I see an old guy come up and get like a 30-day or a 60-day chip. And I'd be pissed. I'd be like, shit, I could have stayed out 20 more years, you know. And then I'd see a young guy come in. And I'd be like, shit, I came in too late. Like, I should have, you know. It's like we all came in exactly when we're supposed to come in. If you're here and you're trying, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You know this, I love babies. Let that baby cry. Just don't move. Don't pass anything and walk around and shit. Babies cry and play and all that shit. Yeah, I'm about out of time. You know, one of my favorite parts of the big book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. With it, you can avert death and misery for others. Because in my hands, that's just guilt and shame. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, my dark past is the greatest possession I have. I wish I could explain that to my family. I have to steal from you. I hope you understand. I have to help a bunch of people later, you know. I have to miss Grandma's funeral. You don't understand. I mean, it's going to be the reason I can help people later in my life, you know. And because that guilt and shame, it comes for me. You know, I have my grandma dying on her deathbed, and she's like, where's AB? I want to see my grandson. And, you know, and I'm stuck in Austin. She's down in South Texas, and she wants to see me. And I've got a half gallon. I'm like, to grandma, you know. And I think I'm honoring her, and I'm not getting to say goodbye to the woman that loves me. And that's happened so many times in my life. You know, I'm missing what's right in front of me, trying to not experience it, to not sit with the feeling of loss, to not sit with the feeling of love or misery or anger, whatever it is. Today I get to sit with it. You know, I still have coping mechanisms, but they're healthier than they were. You know, God, I love Austin Recovery. You know, I want to come out here more. This place saved my life. You know, I have gratitude for Austin Recovery, so I'm here tonight. You know, so if there's one message I can, you know, give to you guys is make your gratitude an action, not a feeling. You know, I'm grateful for my recovery. I pray and meditate in the morning. I go to a meeting. I call another alcoholic to see how they're doing. You know, I'm grateful for my friends. I call them and check up on them. I'm grateful for your cell phone. There's a good reading I like in Cocaine Anonymous. It's called Reaching Out. It said, I made it into this program because someone was out there working their 12th step on me. Someone passed it on to me. Someone was out there after they got clean and sober, caring about others. I need to never, ever forget that. Had they simply gone on with their lives and forgotten about people like me who were out there using and suffering, I wouldn't be here today. My gratitude begins with that fact. It is with gratitude in mind that I reach out to others, especially newcomers. I need to have them in my life. That's where spirituality for me begins. You know, that's how I get to live my life today, man. I give my life to you guys. And it's annoying and it imposes on the people that love me and want to spend time with me that I go carry the message, that I get to go fellowship with you guys. But I've traveled and I go travel for weeks at a time and without the fellowship and without the mechanics of this program, I get miserable. I get restless. I get irritable. I get discontent. And I don't do miserable well. I'm going to treat it. I have a disease that's going to get treated. It might be treated with money. It might get treated with relationships. It might get treated with food. But it might get treated with dope or alcohol. So today I treat mine with prayer, meditation, service, and love. And I'm so happy today that I get to love. I have this capacity to love that I never had in my life. And I've got this amazing job. I've got this amazing family. I've got amazing girlfriend. Amazing friends and fellowship. But that's not why I'm happy. I'm happy so I get to have an amazing girlfriend. I get to have amazing friends. I get to have an amazing fellowship because I'm happy. Thanks, guys.